You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Tom Leeser. He's calling me from Portland. Tom, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, hi, Brainerd. How are you?
Really good. So, Tom, I want to talk to you about a few things. I want to talk about your work as an educator, as a curator, as a writer, and also as an artist and what you're doing at the moment. So let's start off with that. I'd like to know what you're doing in terms of your own work, what you're working on. You've had a lot of, you know, major installations at museums across the country. So what is it that you're working on now, just to get into your work?
Well, right now I'm collaborating with a really interesting composer and trombonist named Matt Barbier, and kind of working on a project that is an extension of some previous work that we've done about a year or so ago at Machine Project, which is live performance and video, kind of like a video and trombone duet. But this project is going to feature tubas. And we're looking at tuba and spoken word and video. And it's I guess I could call it a speculative diary of an experimental filmmaker from the 60s named Takaoka Imoru. He had been a very influential filmmaker for me when I was starting out as an experimental filmmaker. And I thought I wanted to sort of go back and investigate strategies and sort of methodologies that I had employed years ago when I was doing more film work. I've always been interested in questions around how experimental film makers worked with diary as a means, you know, from Jonas Mekas through Stan Brakhage, through a number of artists. And so as a speculative diary, I'm kind of making work by incorporating Imoru's methods from his own practice and making new work by using those practices that reflect some of the tendencies within notions of portraiture, film portraiture, and also different self-reflexive sort of strategies around structural film.
Let me just ask this. So you're talking about a speculative diary that you're saying the performance and the collaboration with music and video is based on. By speculative diary of the filmmaker that was so influential for you, are you saying that this is a diary that you will essentially make up, that it's not drawn from an actual diary, that this is one that you've created. That you're imagining he would write based on his work?
Kind of all three. It's made up, and it's made up of my own work, and it will point back to other filmmakers that I've been influenced by. There's one section that I'm kind of paying homage to Morgan Fisher. There's another section that pays homage to Barry Gerson, another section that pays homage to Imoru. It's fictional. But, you know, the work is experimental, so there's not a narrative associated with the work. It's more like a visual diary that sort of comes out of the tradition of, you know, sort of 1970s experimental film, a lot of film diarists.
So this is interesting because it kind of looks back on, I mean, to talk about this project seems like it's, you know, it's referencing influences and you're at a mature point in your work. So, you know, you're collaborating and kind of looking at not only the history of filmmakers that have influenced you, but your own work. So if that's the case, if I'm not kind of misphrasing that, how will it actually come together? How will people know when there's different sections? Will it seem experimental to the extent that we won't actually understand that it's a speculative diary, or will the viewer be able to understand in the middle of the videos and music that we are actually involved or moving through different diaries?
I'm leaning towards allowing it to play in a sort of ambiguous space. Of course, I'll put out program notes and a project description, you know, prior to the event, which would, you know, talk about Imoru and talk about my relationship with sort of being exposed to his work over the years, specifically in a sort of a formative stage of my own career. And I think from there, I'll basically let the work just play for itself without getting too specific. And I'll probably give some credits towards the end of the piece that refer back to the other filmmakers.
And will that be imagery? I mean, can we talk at all about the imagery in the videos? Will the imagery refer to the filmmakers themselves or no?
Not necessarily through the representational aspects of the image, but more along the lines of looking at their methods of creating their work. So, for example, Immoral did a number of projects back in the day where he did film portraits of other filmmakers. And so in one of the sections, I've collaborated with an interesting outsider artist from Alabama named Joe Minter. And so I did a portrait of Joe, a video portrait of him for an exhibition that was done at the Alabama Contemporary Art Center. And so I'm going to incorporate that into one of the diary pieces. So it'll show off the notion of portraiture. There's some other aspects of strategies that would incorporate abstraction but representation at the same time. And so Amaro worked a lot with light in his work. And so there's one section that was made during the Women's March in Los Angeles just recently. And that's basically light and shadow. And so I'll have that as one section. And then each section is bookmarked by a date. And those dates refer to other events or important historical notions of, let's say, one date, for example, I'll just say one because I don't want to give them all away, but one date is, for example, the day Walter Benjamin died. And so there'll be these dates that will sort of bookend the clips. I'm interested in the speculative process in terms of creating these kinds of projects that reference other things, and I've been doing that for a little while now. But I'm also, you know, the project kind of came to me partly because I work with a number of graduate students at CalArts, and I see that, you know, at this point in my career, I kind of wanted to sort of go back and sort of look at the people that influenced me. Bruce Conner, for example, Pat O'Neill, a number of these artists. And I wanted to sort of somehow sort of go back and revisit that work because it's been such a long time since I've, you know, really paid serious attention to it. And it was really refreshing to go back and see some of the work and the groundbreaking sort of strategies that they've employed. And I realized that, you know, a lot of my career is indebted to a lot of these filmmakers. So I wanted to sort of look back and kind of reflect upon that a little bit. And it was really funny. When I told one of my students about the project, she said, "Oh, that's rather sentimental." And I thought, well, yeah, kind of, but not sentimental in a bad sense, but sentimental in the sense that it's a sentiment, right? It's a remembrance. It's a way of poetically thinking about other work and trying to actually see that work within my own processes. So,
it seems to me also as a kind of something that a more mature artist would make in the sense of being self, you know, in referencing your history, the history of influence, the history of your work and how you came to be the artist that you are today. I mean, I've seen different shows where artists, I mean, anywhere really, from Jasper Johns to, I don't know, current artists that I can think of, are referencing influences and their past and their past works. And you could say those were all sentimental, but I would say that they're more referencing their history and what made them. And I think, and just correct me if you think I'm wrong or reaching here, but that as we get older, what influences us, what has influenced us, what made us who we are today is something that's perhaps easier to embrace and would seem harder to understand from the point of view of a young student.
Oh, well, exactly, because you know when you're a young graduate student, you know you have your whole career ahead of you, right? And then when you're sort of mid-career, you know you're kind of stuck in the middle, right? you've got a half of your career you can look back upon, and there's the other half that you still need to do something with. And so that's the kind of position I find myself in. And I agree with you. It's not. I kind of chuckled when she mentioned the word sentimental because it made me think about what the word actually means. And of course, it's not sort of sentimental on the surface. But you're absolutely right. It's a historical kind of investigation and a remining, and not only a remining of those strategies and works, but also a reminding of that. I have to be reminded of the fact that, you know, my practice comes and emerges out of other practices, and that's basically how network thinking. And I'm, you know, since I got out of grad school, I got heavily involved in computers and computer imaging and things, and kind of left filmmaking behind. And since then, I've been very involved in not only working online, but also, you know, working with computer imagery, but in addition to that, working with computer sound work and things like that. My practice has really kind of expanded into a lot of different areas. But back then, it was really focused on film and really focused on that particular medium and that particular discipline. So I really felt that it kind of like suddenly I woke up one day, I just said, you know, I have to go back and reinvestigate this. I have to, you know, sort of remind myself where I started from and you know, how that's reflected in the newer digital work and also the performance-based work. So it was a little bit of research on my part, kind of researching myself in a way.
That makes sense, you know, and you know, almost in the process that's kind of similar to having a, you know, a retrospective or a survey does that for artists. You have to kind of leave a little bit of your work. But let's talk about it. I mean, you're mentioning other things that you're involved in, other programs, and, you know, I want to talk about viral.net, but of course also as you're program director of the Art and Technology Program in the School of Art and the director for Center for Integrated Media at the California Institute of the Arts. Those are some of the projects that you're involved in, as well as viral.net. Should we talk about one of them? Would viral.net begin to help us to talk about those other two things that you're doing at school?
Yeah, sure. That would be good. Well, you know, 15 years ago, I was hired by CalArts to work as a director for the Center for Integrated Media, which is an interdisciplinary concentration for grad students from all the different schools. I started viralnet.net because at that time online publishing was starting to take off, and I was very interested in looking at online media as a multidisciplinary extension of my artwork. And so it gave me an avenue to, one, curate other writers and other artists to work with me, and two, it gave me an opportunity to expand my writing practice, and three, it enabled me to bring a number of artists who wouldn't necessarily be connected to a digital medium to expose them to that. So those three things kind of drew me to this project. So I also was interested in looking at how online strategies were influencing or affecting how we think about journalism and publication. And so I was very interested in looking at a hybrid model that would allow me to work with some spoken word artists, to some moving image artists, and some sound artists in ways that function more as a within a curatorial framework, not just a journalistic framework. So the project has evolved over the years. I think we started it about 10 years ago now. And so just in those short
time. The project viralnet.net.
Viralnet.net, yeah. It's about 10 years old. So so much has happened in 10 years, and the proliferation of, you know, online publication has just, you know, taken off and really morphed into, well, basically what we're dealing with now, which is a crisis in notions of truth and the crisis of meaning, right? And so, you know, in a way, I kind of look at the project as an antithesis of all of that, and purposely designing it in such a way with the help of arts organizations and funding through arts organizations, I can sort of look at different economic models of working with publication. So one example of what I'm talking about is we pay all the artists that work with us on that particular project, the writers and the artists that submit work, but they own the copyright to everything. We don't. So we're almost more like a posting site, and we don't maintain editorial control. The artists do. So once we commission someone's work, a group of peers examines the work and makes sure it's something that wants to get put up online. And then once it's online, that pretty much it's still the property and the responsibility of the artist.
Do people, do the artists submit work to you? How are people chosen to be part of that, or how do people submit work so that it is reviewed, as you're saying?
Yeah. No, we choose them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a group of us. I work with a rotating group of advisors and curators, and so we'll choose the people to participate, and we'll send out a letter of invitation, and then they'll submit something to us, and then we look at it and evaluate it, and then we put it up, and then we give them an honorarium. And so, I think that in a way, pecuniary exchange. It's outside of the honorarium, they retain copyright ownership of the work and also editorial responsibility for the work. But what occurs towards the end is that we'll then produce a show or an exhibition or an event that speaks to the work. So over the years, we've done collaborations with the Museum of Jurassic Technology and Center for Land Use here in Los Angeles. We've collaborated with ISEA, the International Society of Electronic Arts, in 2012, and we helped organize one of their themes for that particular conference called Radical Cosmologies. Working with fellows now. We just finished a over a year-long project with artist Mary Mattingly, and she contributed as a fellow. So it's pretty much a cultural and scholarly.
As a fellow, what does that mean? How did Mary Mattingly become a fellow? I've also interviewed her about a project similar to what she's doing.
Yeah. So, you know, Mary's work is very much about a social practice in regards, and also extremely an extremely large, ambitious kind of practice in regards to sustainability and education. One of her projects involved working on a barge that sailed around Manhattan, and there was it was like basically a place for social exchange. Water positive.
So she became a fellow by being she was chosen to be a fellow.
I was introduced to her work through some other curators in New York, and we met, and then I put it to everybody back in LA, and we invited her to be a fellow that she ended up posting her research on our site. And so we gave her a WordPress page, and she ended up just for the whole year logged her research in terms of what she was working on in her studio practice. And so in that case, people had access to just some of the ideas and things that she was working on. And it ended up, what's interesting about it is that it ended up, ViralNet.net in general, ended up being a tool that we use within the two programs, because then what occurs is that we generate our own texts for students to use in class. So in that regard, not only do we assign, book readings and things like that, but we also generate our own work, and so that it becomes a sort of an armature for the program in terms of reading and research for the students.
It becomes an armature for the program at
CalArts.
California, CalArts, Center for Integrated Media becomes an armature for that, right?
Because I'm talking about the Art and Technology program, for both programs,
And when we talk about the Arts and Technology and the other program, and what's happening in those programs that dovetails best with that? I mean, you're kind of explaining it now, but is there a theme of what comes out of those programs or a goal in terms of what you're reaching for in those?
Yeah, I get it. I'm not so sure if it's a theme, because that would imply a sensibility, and then that would imply a kind of hierarchy in terms of what we would expect the students to make. It's quite the opposite. It's very much more of a self-directed graduate program, and both of them are. And we are interested in, you know, carrying on the mission and tradition within CalArts is of being an experimental arts institution. And it fits for me because, as I mentioned earlier, I come out of an experimental film background. I went to the San Francisco Art Institute. And so for me to think about my approach to my own work in regards to being creating a kind of an experimental methodology, it implies that I carry that over into my educational practice. And so I'm very much interested in notions of progressive arts education in relationship to practice and doing, and also in terms of theory, but looking at different curricular models that sort of, you know, favor more of a risk-taking and experimental approach. So it's not as from a curricular point of view, it's not as instructional, say, as some of the other art and technology programs. It's much more focused on an art practice that incorporates technology versus technology that incorporates art practices. So where our emphasis is on a studio art practice, and especially a studio art practice that is experimental, not just from a technical point of view, but also from a conceptual point of view.
Very good. It sounds exciting, and you know, your work is very exciting, and the whole nexus of all these things coming together sounds like something that's working very well as not only a conduit for students and faculty, but also for the public, because all these efforts is essentially generating, it seems to me, an archive and the ability for more work, more new work to get out into the world.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bernard. I feel like in a way, you know, we're obviously entering into some pretty reactionary times, right? And I think that as educators and as artists, we need to respond to that. And I think that one of the reasons that I went back to my own earlier practices and my own time as a grad student to look for some inspiration, I kind of feel like we've commodified the notion of experimentation to such an extent that it ceases to be experimental anymore. And I think that maybe, you know, of course we can sort of understand the notion that, you know, a modernist avant-garde has kind of collapsed on itself and has become something, has morphed into something else, which we find very hard, difficult to describe because we're in the middle of it, right? But I think in a lot of ways, these particular reactionary times require us to go back and rethink some of those earlier tendencies, because if we look at how Black Mountain College was started, and if we look at the early days of the New School, and we look at the San Francisco Art Institute, you know, from the 50s, you know, there's a lot of information there that I'm afraid is going to get lost. And I think also to be radical in these particular times is really important, because I think in some cases it's so easy to kind of assume a superficial radical nature or tendency, right? And I think that is part of maybe the downside to the digital advancements or the notion of networking and social media. I don't think I would be advocating turning the clock back. I don't think that's what I'm getting at. But what I'm getting at is I think that there might be a necessity or might be a need to rethink the avant-garde and rethink the notions of what the avant-garde was attempting to do, and reinvestigate those things as positions of opposition.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very important to think about now. Before we go, I want to ask you what you're reading at the moment. When I ask everybody at the end, which could be off topic or not, but I'm always curious what people are reading.
Well, I'm reading a couple things, but one book that pops up is a book called Connected by Stephen Shaverio. Another book that I'm reading is by a woman named Kathy O'Neill called Weapons of Math Destruction, M-A-T-H, Math Destruction. And both of those looking at questions around the current conditions, political and social, of networking. And in terms of Kathy O'Neill's work, particularly in relationship to notions of big data. So, yeah, those are the two things I'm looking at right now.
Tom, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing all about all your work.
And I also have to give you a shout out. I mean, it's great project that you're doing, and the archive that you're managing over there. It's a nice resource.
Thanks so much.
So good work for you too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.